Right, this is the Cool Shit Podcast. Each week, we round up the latest cool shit, helping us think different and keep inspired. What makes it in, what gets left out, and what gets challenged. Is it cool? Is it shit? Or does it cross the magic threshold and come bona fide, certified cool shit? Welcome to the editor's meeting. Welcome to the Cool Shit Podcast, episode 31. I am Gareth Carter, and things are a little bit different today. Yes, we have guests, but get this. Our first guest is James. James, you're a guest.
I'm a guest.
James has been complaining all week. This, oh, I'm ultra busy. Oh, I've got pitches. Oh, I've got meetings on that day. Oh, it's so stressful. Oh, I'm flying off that night. Oh, my word. It's just, oh, if I can fit it in, I will.
All true.
Yeah. So he's taken the option that he's not going to be the little chief this week. He's just going to be a little guest.
A little guest, yeah. It is like being a guest in my own house.
It is. But anyway, happy to have you on, sort of.
Thanks,
sort of. Shanice!
Hello.
Back again, how are you?
Back again for the last time.
I think Shanice is making a reference to the fact that she is going to be finding a new home pretty soon. Not that we've banned her from the podcast. Can I just make that, clear?
Yeah, I was never banned, even though it took a long time for me to be invited, but it's fine.
Which kind of leaves you thinking, right? Well, who's in charge of this ship? Who is going to be the chief editor this week? And guess who it is?
It's Gina.
Oh.
It's me.
Here's another one. Like this podcast has like really never nearly been this week. Gina's been like, oh, I'm at home, I'm ill. Oh no, I don't want to do it. The fact that this is even happening, it's a miracle.
Yeah, you're welcome.
A miracle.
You're welcome, world.
Oh, I read it back. Newsletter last week. I mean, I don't read it all the time. I did think it was quite good last week.
It was good.
Yeah, it was well written.
So I've got...
Pains me to say it.
Yeah, there's like expectation that I have to...
Okay. So with that expectation...
Yes.
I'd be interested to know what your first story is. Like, are you going to bat it out of the park? Let's hear it.
I don't know if I'm going to bat it out of the park, but I am going to talk about gingerbread houses. So I thought, you know, we're introducing...
That's a no-all man.
Never mind. Really killed
him. No. I like this story, so I thought as we're going into the festive season, we might as well keep it festive.
Cool. What about gingerbread houses?
So, Pop-Tart, it's been 10 years since they had their limited edition gingerbread flavoured Pop-Tarts, and to celebrate that, they
oh,
have...
10 years already? Such a massive deal.
Oh.
Yeah, okay, go on.
So what they've done is they've almost resurrected this, their gingerbread house, by putting it up for sale on Zillow, so that's like an online real estate website. And it's situated in the Wildberry Woods, so if you guys ever want to pop by to see this house. But it's actually not a real house. They've done it in collaboration with Zillow so that they can kind of challenge customers to share their creations on Instagram and Twitter, and then they could win $15,000 towards a mortgage or renovating their own home.
Oh, that's $15,000. Is this an American thing then?
It's an American thing. It's not in the UK, so don't make... your own gingerbread houses and submit.
I think because I don't know if you guys were following my Instagram or anything, but I was in the States recently. I did notice that when you're in a supermarket, Pop-Tarts seem more prominent than they are in the UK. I think they're still quite a big deal.
It's
in
a
America.
Big deal there. Yeah.
I was never allowed them when I was younger because there's like so
sweet.
Much sugar
yeah,
in
yeah.
them.
Yeah,
I'm still not.
Crazy.
Like I was explaining to my young daughter, I was like, "It's like a cake. It's like a fucking cake for breakfast.
Essentially,
but
yeah.
it spits out hot shit at you. So it's also
so
like,
good.
It's like a dangerous cake as yeah. well. Like I think they did.
The jam is boiling. In
yeah,
there.
Exactly.
But
exactly.
It's really good. But I just thought this was quite cool because they've like created this cute little festive story. They've even got a fake address for it, and people can make their own and win money.
Okay, can I just recount this story for you because I'm like, let me just see if I'm getting this right. Pop-Tarts used to have a gingerbread flavour.
Yeah.
10 years ago, must have been
awful, and they stopped doing it.
Yeah, exactly. But for Christmas, they're resurrecting that special one-off flavour.
Yeah.
But to support that and celebrate that, they're building a gingerbread house for reals.
No.
Pop-Tarts in a forest.
They want you to think it's real. It's not actually real. They've launched a potential gingerbread house. So it's a fake one on Zillow.
Right.
So people will be like, oh my God, let's go look at this Pop-Tart house. They click on it and then it takes them to like, okay, why don't you submit your own and you can win 15K.
And Zillow is like if I'm searching for a property to buy.
Yeah. Like a Rightmove or something, but in America.
What dickhead's going to be like, oh, yeah, that looks nice. Yeah, actually, I was considering getting a nice condo, but yeah, why don't we just get a Pop-Tarts house?
Well, I thought it was cute.
Okay. Can I just ask, is it like a real life Pop-Tart or is it literally on the Zillow?
It's not real. No. It's not real, guys.
But they want other people to do it.
Yeah, but not an actual house.
But it's a computer generated gingerbread house.
Made out of Pop-Tarts.
Right, okay. Because I was thinking that's kind of cheeky if you're making people buy Pop-Tarts to build this thing mm-hmm. and then you might not even win 15,000.
That is what they're doing, isn't it? They're not telling people to make digital recreations.
No, to actually have a go.
Oh, yeah, it is.
Right, this story, I'm sorry, but it's pretty simple.
This is why I'm never going to do this again. I didn't want to stop with James and it's for this reason.
Yeah, but Shanice's got a point. I've got to now go and buy. Pop-Tarts are expensive enough, right? And James, what do you reckon?
He's not. Sorry, why are you falling into old habits? He's not editor in chief.
I'm the guest.
But you want him to give his opinion.
But he can't. Okay, Gina, do you not understand the format? I can't ask you. What do you think? You bought it.
That's also true. Yeah.
I did like it, but then after your little outburst there, I've been slightly put off. I was with it. I thought they'd found a way of making maybe not a mansion, but a fairly sizable condo with actual Pop-Tarts. Because I feel like you could do that.
I feel like if you put a bit of cement on the Pop-Tart,
that's what I'm saying.
It could feel quite sturdy. Right?
Yeah. So if they had done that, I was kind of on board with this. But now it's basically they've had an idea and they haven't done it. But they said, "But you lot can try, and we might give you something." But
I think that's good because it's getting people into the spirit of things.
I think that if you are to do this with your kids, and I can imagine a lot of kids, and they do gingerbread houses in America more so than we do, I can imagine a lot of people entering and it being really cute, and the idea of winning 15,000 would bring on a good spirit. Mm-hmm. So if I'm thinking in that sense, I think it's kind of cool. Yeah.
You're now expecting me to buy whatever 17,000 to make a fucking house with.
You know, with gingerbread houses, most of them aren't house size. You don't need 50,000.
Yeah, but then they're making this point of putting it on a real estate thing. So they're confusing everyone here, including me. Is this house size?
To be fair, you seem like the type of adult who never grew up who would live in a house made of Pop-Tarts. The walls are made of chocolate.
Let's talk about Banksy, who is always...
you're doing his job as well now.
I am, so. So, basically, everyone knows who he is, right? A graffiti artist.
Yes. I've heard of him, yeah.
You've heard of him?
Yeah.
I think some people might know him.
Yeah, I might have heard of him, yeah.
He basically encouraged people to help themselves to shoplift at the flagship store for Guess, which is a designer fashion brand.
Where?
On Regent Street. Oh. Because they used his art and his images in their recent marketing campaign without his permission. So he then put up an Instagram post. He has 11.8 million followers, and this got over nearly 2 million likes, saying, "Attention all shoplifters, please go to Guess on Regent Street. They've helped themselves to my artwork without asking. How can it be wrong for you to do the same to their clothes?" So then that forced the shop to close because they were obviously really worried that there was going to be loads of looters. They covered up the artwork and, I don't know if people actually made it there to shoplift or not, but it's an interesting one.
First of all, there's a very real point with it, isn't there, that they've stolen his art. But then, I don't know, there's a part of me that thinks that Banksy's art is out there. Do you know what I mean?
That's one of the main points.
Also, who'd you email to ask his permission? No one knows who he is.
Exactly, If Banksy had... Do you know what I'd be really disappointed at? Is if Banksy's got a manager.
Banksy at Gmail.
Yeah.
But you know what? I went to his exhibition... Well, it's not even his exhibition, but I went to a Banksy exhibition. It was in Covent Garden. And while you're going through there, everywhere it says basically that he hasn't said that the artwork can be used there. So I don't think he really gives permission anyway, but I think the difference with this, I guess, is that that's an exhibition and, what are you going to do? Tell them to sue mm-hmm. the place, I guess. But with this, it's actually a retail store. And mm-hmm. I think with the whole thing of fast fashion stealing things from different places, and it sort of adds more to it.
But it's not even fast fashion though, is it? Yeah. It's high end.
But I mean,
that makes it more interesting because if it was you go into Primark and you see a Snoopy t-shirt or a Donald Duck t-shirt, there's so many different properties that fast fashion hold do. Mm-hmm. It's just a bit rubbish, I reckon, of Guess to try and do a Banksy t-shirt. And also, just a bit crap that, like, your guess. Like, why haven't you got, like, sign off on this?
It's worth noting that this was... It was a campaign in collaboration with... They're doing a range with a partner. Well, they're partnered with a company called Brandalized, who do, like, graffiti-style clothing.
And I think I read something, this might not be true, but they're like, Banksy had previously given
permission,
permission to Brandalize to use it, and now Brandalize are using it in collaboration with Guess. So
this is where I don't like the Banksy sort of like because the Banksy legend is brilliant, but if there's a little bit of argy-bargy about, like, oh, you know, but I'm partnering with you, but I didn't say you partnered
there.
It's not
good look.
I'm like, I don't want to hear that belittling, like, I don't want to hear that human stuff.
He's being a Karen.
When I think of Banksy, I think of some sort of legend, some sort of folklore, and I don't want to feel like there's a real person behind it going like, no, that's my property.
Yeah, it does. It feels, see, I was hearing it in a nasal voice as well, and I saw Brandalize shared something saying, is a post from Banksy in like 2013, a quote where, I'll just read it out, any graffiti in a public space that gives you no choice whether you see it or not is yours. It belongs to you. It's yours to take, rearrange and reuse. Asking for permission is like asking to keep a rock someone just threw at your head.
How many rocks he's kind of signed his,
he's kind of signed his own death warrant there a little bit.
That's the point. Like, he goes onto other people's properties. Like, don't get me wrong. Like, I'm all for street art, but, you know, that is his deal, right? He goes to other people's properties and puts his artwork on without permission, right? Hmm. So there is something, perhaps, I don't know, artistic about a high fashion brand nicking his art, perhaps.
No, I was just going to say, in an adverse way, though, do you think that this is actually not good promotion for Guess? But I don't think many people are thinking of Guess on, like, a normal day. Like, hasn't this kind of put them into, like, you know, like a sphere again? Like, it's something that people are thinking about.
I do think that it has that effect. I don't think that they set out to do that. It does have that effect. What I don't think is looks cool is them closing their shop.
There was like security guards outside. But also, who, if you're going to go and like shoplift, I doubt a lot of people will go to Guess to shoplift as well.
No,
Sainsbury's mainly.
Exactly.
Bananas and peanuts.
Bananas and chewing gum,
Is it possible that is one of those stories where everyone's just kind of made themselves look a bit shit?
I feel like
it's a competition for who's lost the most rather than who's in the right.
There's also the whole idea of, if it's like graffiti, it's public art, so you can't copyright it anyway, I don't think. So like, what's your issue?
Is he gonna take them to court? Banksy's gonna turn up in a balaclava.
He's anonymous. What do you expect? People are gonna take the piss when you're anonymous because there's no one to answer for it. So,
but then, do you think that's a tip between his work being art now more so than just graffiti? Because with artists, like, there's a name to it, obviously you don't really see them and stuff like that, and obviously a lot of them are dead, but like, they their work is there, but you can't plagiarize it, you can't copy it. But in his work, yes, it is graffiti, but he's also an artist, so can you really...
I think he's a proper artist, as in, like, he does art that goes in art galleries sometimes. So I mean, it's not just him on the street, he does stand out pieces.
I'm not saying that though, but that's what I'm saying with this. Like, this is technically his art, no? So even like, he may have told this brand, Brandalized or whatever, this statement back in the day, and like, he's like gone to them and said, you can use my work now. But I think the whole thing is that Guess has taken it, and I don't know, like, I don't know the full thing, but I think there's just a sort of like question of, is he a graffiti artist or is he artist now?
I think if Guess had done this right, I think they should have done it like proper full on punk style.
That's what I'm thinking.
Just done it.
Not then close the shop.
Exactly. Yeah. And just like have a whole campaign. Like, guess who Banksy is now?
Guess. Who's Banksy?
Something
like that. Although I do think it is quite funny, Banksy saying to a load of children, go shoplift from this store and they have to close down. That's quite funny. I like that, even though I don't think he's technically in the right. makes everything awfully cheap.
Right, we'll go to Shanice first.
Me?
Yeah.
Okay.
Shanice, have you got a story for us?
I do have a story. So, as many people may or may not know, Black Friday's coming up. And I can turn my screen. Sorry, guys at home, you can't see this. But basically, I stumbled across a interactive video that Google has done, and it's currently with Ludacris and Flo Milli. They're both rappers. And it's called Black Owned Friday. And it's essentially an interactive video, shoppable interactive video, which highlights Black businesses all throughout that you can shop, like Black Friday deals and then just beyond. And for me personally, a lot of people might not know, but I'm black. And
there was a from pause. Listening, you can't know. But
yeah, like, from listening, you can't know. But I'm very passionate about black-owned businesses and small businesses, and I always try and like I'm trying to really build on like buying from there and like telling more people about it. And I just really liked this because I like that it's interactive. You can get like more of a crowd going for it. Like you can get more of a crowd like interested in it. It has more reach because you can find their websites, their shops, etc. And also I sort of liked the using Ludacris, and in previous years they've done it with T-Pain and with Wyclef Jean. So they're using real like cultural black figures on this black campaign, so it's like a proper like well-rounded piece.
It's authentic.
So they're using like big names, OGs, and
and they're using the, well, all of their featured artists are someone who's like from current times. So Ludacris I would say is like big like back in the day, but now like using Flo Milli, who's like relevant now, is like a nice sort of offset to be like, look, we're bringing like, this is like our OG, but now we're bringing you to like now and like
So tell me, like, so I'm just, we're just looking at the video, and it's just a sort of little loop of it. But tell me how it's shoppable, because that's what, like, the video looks really high end and cool.
Yeah,
like I love the art direction. But how is it shoppable? Explain.
So once you go into it, essentially it's like a music video. So Ludacris is like rapping and you can sort of choose where he goes to. So you can either choose like a yoga studio and a barber.
Oh, so it's interactive.
Yeah, it's interactive and shoppable.
Like Gamba Snatch or whatever.
That's literally what I was going to say. Yeah, it's like the Black Mirror episode. Yeah.
Yeah. And it has like links to all of the products. I think there's like 70 plus businesses that they've involved. So everything in the video is black, or obviously not like all the cars and everything, but if you think of like the products that are literally there, set design, etc., they're all from black owned, so you can like click the different areas and like shop as you watch.
Yeah, and then my last question on it is, are they all, because I'm like, it's for an American market and America's huge. I'm wondering how as a black owned business do you get on that, because as a piece of PR for a black owned business, that's dynamite, right?
Yeah.
How do they choose which black owned business features, I guess, is the question I'm asking.
Ludacris did a blog, I can show you the link, but he basically did a blog sort of explaining like how the companies can get involved, and they have to submit it themselves. I don't know they're on like how Google verifies who's there, but I think probably they'd want people who might have a website or are able to handle the, you know, like the business if it does come in. So there's obviously some sort of verification that goes on there, but yeah, they can like self-submit if you're a verified black owned business, and like it can just be put on the video if you're selected.
I mean, I think it's a pretty good campaign. Pop Tarts, what are you
when you know, you're just highlighting how shit my story was compared to that. I think it's really cool because it's also like it's a cool way to shop, first of all. You know, on, it's not just like normal boring online shopping, and it's highlighting black-owned businesses and supporting smaller businesses on Black Friday, changing Black Friday. Because Black Friday, you just think of like Amazon and these like mass produce all these like products, ASOS and Amazon and stuff. So it's cool that it highlights smaller businesses that you can support that are black owned. I like it, and it's a cool video as well.
James, what are you thinking?
Yeah, I like it. It'd be a bit mental if I said, nah, not for me. Oh, actually, to go back to the previous story, I like to shoplift from black-owned businesses. No, of course I don't. I do like it because you do see a lot of kind of, or maybe not a lot, but you see the occasional story of sort of championing black-owned businesses. But this is quite an innovative way of doing it. It's not just, it's kind of like, who's this from? Google.
Yeah.
So it's not just Google have tried to sort of pat themselves in the back and say, here's a list of a load of black-owned businesses. They've actually put quite a bit of thought into it and made it interactive and interesting, that it would appeal to you even if your kind of first thought isn't, oh, I need to engage with black-owned businesses, because you're engaging with something quite cool anyway, and then that leads you to it, which I think is good.
I think it's great.
I'm in favour. I'm pro.
Okay. Well, I think like we have found a story that we all agree on, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hard to talk.
Oh, thank you, guys.
Okay, right. Well, you have reached the final level. You can now walk out with your head held high, Janice.
Bye, everyone.
James, what you got?
I'm not prepared for this, because normally To let the listeners in on a little secret, it may sound authentic and off the cuff, but I've rehearsed almost every word. Whereas this week, I'm very much flying by the seat of my pants, which is also how I plan to travel to Estonia tomorrow. Can't help it. Everything in my life is scripted. Right, so Joe Lycett, I should be clear that I'm kind of reading this. This is the part that I haven't rehearsed, the bit that actually matters. So Joe Lycett got a load of attention about a week ago when he, let's say, threatened David Beckham, saying that if David Beckham didn't end his affiliation, partnership, whatever, with the Qatar World Cup in light of all their human rights violations, particularly in relation to their stance on homosexuality, because Joe Lycett is a homosexual.
God, don't say that's what my mum says.
Homosexual.
Just for the listeners, my mum's like this Algerian lady that's like, yes, I know them, they are the homosexuals. Mum, don't call them the homosexuals. She's like, but they are, they're homosexuals. And I'm like, yeah, but just don't call them, just say gay.
Okay, so Joe Lycett is gay, so he threatened to shred £10,000, which I'll see in brackets is $11,800, which seems low, doesn't it? What on quasi, bit of satire. and then basically, so David Beckham obviously didn't end his affiliation, so Joe Lycett shredded the money, except he didn't in a cost of living crisis, and then the rug pull was that he revealed that that wasn't real money, and by the time he got round to that, because he knew David Beckham wouldn't respond, he'd already donated the £10,000 to LGBTQIA plus charities.
This story winds me up. Why would David Beckham give a shit what he thinks, though? That's the thing.
He wouldn't, that's the point. I think it was, and I'm not even sure if I love this story. I just thought it was interesting. But the whole point was that he knew David Beckham probably wouldn't even see it, and certainly would never take any note of it. But it got an awful lot of attention,
I would argue
he's probably seen it now.
He would have known about this story now because it was successful.
Because it worked so well, yeah. Exactly. And I think the point was, but obviously he was never going to say, tell you what, Joe, you're right. See you later, Qatar. But the point was to use David Beckham's name to draw attention, firstly, to his partnership with Qatar, which kind of flew a little bit under the radar because he was a
reported £10 million football for Qatar.
Yeah,
not for FIFA,
exactly.
For Qatar.
And that went quite under the radar because, well, he stood in the queue, didn't he? what a great guy Bex is. Oh, we're just here enjoying our jam roly polies. but the point was to bring a lot of attention to the issue that Joe Lycett feels passionately about, and I guess the whole David Beckham thing was a bit of a subterfuge Trojan horse for that message.
Okay.
Yeah. So if you haven't seen this, there is it's full of theatre. Like, I've got to say, I fucking love this story because I think the way it's been devised reminds me of the way you devise a campaign, but every single point or sweet spot that could have been hit has been hit. So reminded me of like a little bit like Banksy, Exit Through the Gift Shop or something like that, or sort of like a Black Mirror type thing, because he had already donated the money when he made the first video. That's the first rug pull. So he's saying he's gonna, like, almost like a ransom video, right? He then on the actual day, he shreds the money, then waits a while, and then he explains to the viewer that he's already given the money away to LGBTQ plus. Wow, man, what is it?
LGBTQIA plus.
That's it. Plus charities. And that he knew David Beckham would never respond to him, and it was I'm paraphrasing, but like a hollow and vapid thing that I was doing, kind of like your deal with Qatar. But I have spoken to Attitude magazine. Have your the first cover,
yep,
of a Premiership footballer that it was ever done, and I've spoken to Attitude magazine, and they're happy for me to shred this. I thought every point was hit, and the amount of PR generated off it was fucking brilliant.
We should say Attitude magazine is a gay magazine
yeah,
as well.
Yeah, exactly. So I thought it was like, if I'm looking at it from an advertising sense, and if I'm looking at it as a campaign, I'm like, that's fucking successful. It's fucking smart. And it's just engaging content. It's great.
That was kind of what I thought. Like, even as much as it's a worthwhile message. If you kind of just even forget about that for a moment, just the planning and execution and getting people to nibble on it, and the fact that he waited before he explained himself, because he had for about 2 days a load of people saying, "How the fuck could you tread 10,000 pounds?" And he was kind of addressing them, and so I said, "Of course I didn't do that." Like, just the sort of technical ability to pull it off, I thought was superb.
Shanice, did this story, did you notice this story? Did it come into your radar? What do you think?
It did come into my radar. To say that I paid it a lot of attention, not really, if I'm being honest. But now that you've explained it more, I do find it interesting. I think especially as with the whole the Qatar debate about whether or not it should be there, I actually watched a documentary on FIFA. And especially when I saw that how upset apparently David Beckham was about losing the World Cup 1 year when there was Russia and Qatar, for him now to side with Qatar. Mm. It's just like very interesting. Like, it's very interesting overall, but I don't know. I don't really have more to say further than that.
Because on the actual debate side of should there be a World Cup in Qatar, I think that sort of debate is already, that's already done. Yeah. So all of these things coming out now, I don't know, I don't really have too much of an opinion, apart from when I look at people having fun in Qatar, I hope they're having fun. I'm not of that sort of why are people out there or whatever. I'm because there's a World Cup happening, because that decision was already made, albeit for probably bribery reasons. I do wish the World Cup a good World Cup, right? Yeah. And let people having fun out there.
I hope they have fun, just no heavy petting, no holding hands in the streets, and you'll be fine.
No drinking.
No drinking, no holding hands. I'll tell you what, I'm kind of... You know how this World Cup was meant to be the worst World Cup ever?
I'm enjoying it.
As a bit of an agent of chaos, I'm quite enjoying it. I saw the latest thing is they announced that the attendances, they've got a 60,000 capacity seat stadium, and it popped up at the end today's attendance, 70,000. They're just making it up, which is a lot of fun.
Especially as it's been empty on nearly mm-hmm. all the games.
Yeah. And I don't know if you've seen, but the side of the pitches, they've got these fans, except they're not fans. They are fucking huge outdoor aircon.
Yeah, they're fans instead of fans.
Yeah. Pop Tarts.
Yes.
P2.
I love that. That's my new name. Thanks, Gareth.
What have you thought about the stories? What are you mulling over here? Which ones are you thinking? You can change your opinions or put things out. What's catched your fancy out of the two stories that the other guys have brought in?
Well,
and would that maybe oust one of the stories that you've brought?
I love Shanice's. That's definitely making it in. It's really cool. Just to recap, that's the Black-owned Friday by Google. I'm not sure about yours, James. Sorry. I don't think it's cool, personally.
Okay. It's a bit homophobic, but whatever.
This is not me being homophobic. I just don't think it's enough to push out my Pop-Tart story, not going to lie. I've got the power now, so I'm going to keep...
You know the amount of times that I've been worried that I've made myself look a bit bad in this podcast.
Yeah,
she's topped it.
That's what I'm here
sweet,
to do.
Sweet treat over being allowed to be homosexual and love who you want.
No, just guys, I'm not homosexual. Sorry, I'm not homophobic. I'm also not homosexual. Yeah. If anyone cares,
got loads of gay friends.
Homosexual.
Some cool stories, but you'll just have to see, because you're gonna have to read the
Cool Shit newsletter. Where do we find that? Where do we sign up for that, Gina?
You can find that on zacagency.com/cool-sht, and it's going to be volume 410.
Amazing.
Do me proud, Gina.
I will. I'll try my best.
Okay, right. So that is out Friday, which you'll probably know because you listen to the podcast. James is going to Tallinn, but you're back next week.
Correct.
Thank you for being a guest. Shanice, let's have a little round of applause for Shanice.
Thank you, guys.
Yeah, round of applause.
We're going to miss you on the podcast. You've done some really good ones, actually. You've been involved in, what is this, your fourth, maybe?
Yeah, it's my fourth.
Thank you very much for all of those and today.
Oh, I said I wouldn't cry.
Gina! Stop being in a bad mood. Come on.
I'm taking on James's grumpy energy, I think.
I'm in a good mood today.
I think you did well.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for stepping in. You are a friend of the podcast.
I am.
You can do any role on it. You are Gina. Thank you very much. See you guys next week.